So pity is technically classified as being of five different kinds. There's a lesser thrill, as it's called. The lesser thrill of rapture is the sort which makes, as it were, the hairs of the body stand on end, as when you're very deeply moved by something. Then the momentary rapture, as it's called, the momentary piti, is that which comes just like a flash of lightning. It's so overwhelming that one can bear to experience it just for an instant. It sort of touches one and almost reduces one to ashes, as it were, and then it's gone. You can't stand more of it than that. It just comes and goes. And then there's what's called the flooding rapture. The rapture which just sort of floods in upon you. And this is compared to the waves on the seashore, sort of coming in and filling a cave on the seashore. So in that way, the rapture, as it were, floods in, especially when one is practicing meditation, and one feels always sort of carried away by it. Then there's what's called the all-pervading rapture, in which one feels just like a balloon, as it were, so light, so buoyant, almost as it were lifted up. And lastly, there comes what's called the transporting priti, or transporting rapture, which is said actually to cause levitation. Now, I know I've mentioned this incident before, but I see that there are some who haven't been here before. They might be interested by it. People often ask about levitation. It's a rather minor interest in Buddhism, but Buddhists do believe that it can take place, and they believe that it takes place when the priti, the interest, enthusiasm, joy, or rapture, even ecstasy, becomes so intense that the physical body is actually lifted up by them. And this happens especially in connection with certain breathing exercises. And so I remember that not so many years ago, I happened to be passing through a place called Kharagpur in India. Kharagpur is a very big railway junction. And I'd gone there from Calcutta for a couple of hours to give a lecture. And the lecture was given about 11 o'clock at night. That's the practice in those parts. I like to have good late lectures. And I was waiting for the 1 o'clock, that is 1 o'clock morning train to carry me back to Calcutta. So I was waiting on this station platform, and there were about, I think, perhaps 200 people there with me. And we just got talking to pass the time until the train arrived. As so often happens in India, of course, the train was late. So while I was there with these people, they brought forward a certain individual, very ordinary looking man, in ordinary Indian dress, and they said, "This man has got a problem." So I, of course, thought, well, maybe his wife has run away, or maybe his son hasn't passed an examination, something of that sort. Well, they said, "No, the trouble is that he levitates." So I said, "Do you mean that he literally levitates?" So they said, "Yes." They said, "He is a Kabir Panthi." Kabir Panthi means someone following the sect founded by Kabir, the great medieval Hindu-Muslim yogi. So apparently every morning he was practicing certain breathing exercises, and as a result of these breathing exercises he would just float up a few inches, a few feet above the ground. So I said to these people a little suspiciously, I said, "Has anyone seen this?" So they said, "Oh yes, we've all seen it every day." So they said, "This man just can't control it, and he wants to meditate, but this levitation gets in the way. He'd like to stop it, but he can't. As soon as he does his breathing exercises, it just happens. He just starts going up into the air. So what should he do? How should he stop it?" This is all a question one might be asked at any time in India. So I said, according to Buddhism, levitation is brought about by excess of priti, that is rapture, ecstasy. So what one must do is to cultivate the mental factor of equanimity or tranquility or picture. If one does that, then there will be a sort of counterbalancing force to the priti and the levitation will not occur. Now I never went back to Kharagpur again, and I never have heard whether the treatment or the prescription was successful, but let us hope that it was. I'm reminded incidentally, now we're on the subject, of another little story. I remember about 10 years ago, or maybe a little less, in Kalimpong, up in the Himalayas, I was entertaining to lunch an American couple, He afterwards wrote a book about his experiences called The Razor's Edge. And a Tibetan Lama, a rather distinguished one, who was the head Lama of the Pemyentse Gompa Monastery in Sikkim, and who was a friend of mine, a man of about 45 who had arrived in the area fairly recently. So in the course of the lunch, and it's rather interesting that the Lama himself didn't understand any English, in the course of the lunch, the Americans said rather skeptically, with a rather knowing sort of smile, said to the Lama, through the translator, "I suppose you haven't heard of anyone who can levitate." So the Lama said rather modestly, "Yes," he said, "in fact I do a little myself." So the two Americans nearly fell off their chairs. They said, "You can do it yourself." He said, "Yes." He said, "I don't think I could do it just now." He said, "But if I'm alone in the jungle, in a secluded monastery, if I spent about 6 months there meditating, then I can do this at the end of that period." And I have met a number of Tibetans of this type who have either seen it or who have practiced it. So this is all said to be due, in Buddhism, to what we call priti, or excessive priti, or rapture. When the bliss or the rapture which one experiences, especially in meditation, becomes so intense that the body is quite literally lifted up. Now one finds, of course, records of this sort of thing not only in Buddhist literature and Buddhist life, but even in the lives of some comparatively recent Christian mystics. But Buddhists will say this isn't a very important phenomenon or experience. We've only got through the fourth stage of the path. This is a mundane experience, essentially. If it occurs, one shouldn't bother about it. One shouldn't be particularly exhilarated about it. It just means that one has accumulated priti within one of sufficient intensity to produce this particular psychophysical effect. Now, all these experiences are priti, whether the lesser thrill or the momentary rapture or the flooding rapture or the transporting rapture, these are all psychophysical. That is to say, they're all experienced in the body, that's to say in the nervous system, as well as in the mind. They're not just mental, they're physical also, they're psychophysical. The whole organism is involved. Now, what is this priti? What is this piti? This rapture or ecstasy? We can go into that a little also. We can say, in modern language, in modern terminology, that the priti, the rapture, the ecstasy, comes about as a result of the release of energy due to resolution of what we would call nowadays complexes. That is, within one, there are sort of little blockages of energy. Energy, as it were, short-circuiting itself, locked up. So in the course of one's religious life, in the course of one's spiritual life, especially when one practices meditation, these get resolved, especially through the practice of awareness. One digs down, as it were. One uncovers certain depths within oneself. And all these little complexes are resolved, these blockages are removed, and the energy locked up in them is released, and this surges up. And it's due to this upsurge of energy within oneself, felt throughout the entire nervous system, as well as in the mind, that one experiences priti, this psychophysical rapture or ecstasy. So this is the process so far. These are the stages of the path so far. In dependence upon suffering arises faith. In dependence upon faith arises satisfaction and delight. In dependence upon that satisfaction and delight, as it becomes more and more intense, there arises the priti, the psychophysical, rapture or ecstasy of varying degrees.